Empire podcast this week. It's truth time as Julian Barrett and Simon Farnaby drop by to talk about Mindhorn. Plus all the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that says, enough of this running shit. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to the Empire podcast. This week, I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning and lethal running. First up is our Jurassic World star, man who's had a leg from a few dinosaurs in his time. Don't look him in the eye. It's Nick Dissemblian.
Hello. Hi, Chris.
I looked you in the eye.
Never looked me in the eye.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
Run from me.
Run! How are you?
Never run away from a T-Rex. Run away from anything else.
Really?
Dinosaur-wise.
Okay. Unless you're flats, of course, in which case you can run away from a T-Rex. That's been proven. That's science. Next up, I'm very excited about this, is we haven't had a newcomer to the booth for a long, long time. And we have a newcomer now, and I'm fascinated to find out her likes and dislikes over the coming weeks, just so I can sculpt her intros in the right manner. Her name is, am I pronouncing this right? Heather O'Hara. Helen O'Hara!
Hey!
Helen's back! To save us from our innuendo.
From Camartage. I mean Nepal. I wasn't at Camartage.
With the Ancient One.
I don't know where these rumours get started. That's outrageous.
How was it? Should we tell people what you were doing in case anyone's new to the podcast?
I was doing something called the Mustang Trail Race, which was about 100 miles of, and about, I don't know, like 10 kilometres vertically up and down through the hills of the Mustang region of Nepal, which was fascinating, absolutely amazing place. It was basically like travelling back in time to the medieval era and then climbing a shit ton of hills for no reason.
Wow.
Yeah, lots of goats, some lizards, some vultures. I saw some vultures eating a cow.
Were they circling overhead?
They were circling. I was half dead for most of the run, yes.
I am a bit suspicious. I think Helen might have just been watching Supernatural.
I have video of the vultures.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even look like Sam or Dean.
So. Well, that's
hey, you could have gone to the zoo.
That's true, but I did not.
This is an amazing achievement. Put it in some context, I ran here to the pod booth studio from a top London hotel.
Okay.
It was about half a mile.
Right.
And I am soaked, and it's a lovely, lovely, lovely sight and smell for you guys now. I am soaked in sweat.
You're doing a run at the end of this month, right?
I am, but Nick, I don't want to talk about me.
No, you do.
Okay, so I'm doing a 10K. What of it, guys? I mean, hey, everyone can do a 10K. But my God, you did a 10K every day.
I did about twice that most days, yes. A little bit more some days. I'll be honest, I like a lot of it I just hiked because like hills are super hard, it turns out. Like I was not prepared for how many hills there were. And genuinely in Nepal, people talk about the vertical height you travel, not the distance.
Mm-hmm.
So like I met this guy one day, I was huffing and puffing halfway up a hill and this really incredibly annoying person goes, still 500 meters to go. And then said, you probably didn't want to know that, did you?
Oh.
I'm like, no, I didn't. And for a moment as I walked on, I thought, well, maybe he just meant 500 meters. Maybe he just meant I'm only half a kilometer from the top of the hill.
Uh-huh.
No, he did not. He meant I was half a vertical kilometer from the top of the hill.
Man.
It was horrendous.
It's impressive. I've never climbed a mountain that didn't have a cafe at the top.
and those are wise words, and that is a good plan to live by. And honestly, I was climbing goat trails and rabbit tracks, and then descending them, which were like was scary also because there were loose rocks and drops.
You
and
are Nathan Drake.
I am very much not that. I mean, I'll be honest, listen, let me be completely clear here. I came second last in this thing. There were people who were super fast and went much faster than me. Big up to Sylvain and Stefano at the front, Stefan at the front.
Big up, guys.
They were incredible. I was not incredible. I was extremely slow, but I had an amazing time taking pictures and looking around. Yes.
You did it.
I did.
You climbed Everest.
No.
That's my understanding of what you did.
There are other mountains in Nepal.
Really?
Yeah, it turns out.
Big ones?
Yeah, really big ones. Oh, I also went on a flight and I saw Everest.
You saw Everest?
Yeah. You can go on a special mountain flight and like look at the 8,000 meter peaks and stuff.
That's amazing.
I've seen the movie Everest on a plane.
There you go. So it's pretty much like that.
You were on set of the movie Everest.
I was on the set. On the set of Everest.
This is amazing.
I saw Josh Brolin get fake snow. It was they were using mashed potato as snow.
Oh, wow.
This is a big
that
segue
is weird,
off
yeah.
of anything.
Wow.
A segue to a segue, but yeah.
I'd also like to say, I think it was actually in the end more the golden child than I was expecting. I did actually genuinely see a living goddess. I did get pooed on by a bird.
Really?
Yeah.
A vulture going, come on, hurry up.
No, it was a pigeon immediately before seeing the living goddess.
Did you see a dancing Pepsi can?
I did not, but I did see one of those knives.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know what? That's the same prop dagger, I believe, they used in Big Trouble in Little China.
Is it?
I did not know that. It's the same prop.
Wow.
This is now turning into, I don't know what, yeah. A Golden Child spoiler special.
Well, we'll do that at another
day,
obviously.
That sounds awesome. I would definitely do that.
It's very good to have you back, Heather.
Thank you. Thank you,
it's
Charles.
An amazing,
it's Hannah.
Amazing. It's an amazing achievement. Shut up, Niall. It's an amazing achievement. And if you want to sponsor, you can still sponsor you.
Yes.
What's the
It's virginmoneygiving.co.uk/crazymountaincraziness.
And it's going to the Helen
NSPCC.
O'Hara Fund.
ENSPCC. Yeah.
Okay.
So similar.
Good, good, good. It's going to the Ubers you, the Uber fund that you got all those cars to drive you to the end of each stage.
If there had been an Uber, if there was no internet, if there had been Uber, that would have been amazing.
Before we get on to this week's question, we don't have a lot of time. We're in a new booth this week. I should say that because our old booth was dismantled this week because we're moving offices.
RIP
so
booth.
I felt really sad about that grey, decrepit booth being dismantled by two burly blokes from Sheffield. But anyway, we don't have a lot of time, but I will say that I thought you were dead. Genuinely, I was really worried about you because you were not responding to my texts, which is not unusual, let's face it.
Well, yeah.
Especially the special texts I send every now and again. But Nick responds to those instantly. It's so weird. You were not on Twitter.
No.
You were not on the Instagrams.
No.
You were not on the Facebooks.
There was nothing.
You disappeared off the grid for like 5 days, like Will Smith in Enemy of the State. I was really worried about you. But I'm glad to see that you're okay.
I was basically in medieval times and it was amazing.
Awesome. All right, we do have a question.
Oh.
And the question is related to running. It's from Niall McCracken, Niall_thedetail on Twitter. And he says, running the Belfast Marathon on Monday. Sorry, I'll do it proper. Running the Belfast Marathon on Monday. So what about a running themed question? Best ever running scene in a movie, says Niall McCracken. Uncanny impression of Niall, I have to say. I held this one for you specifically because Niall has already run the Belfast Marathon, as of course you know.
Well done, Niall. Yes.
Well done, Niall. In fact, Niall, write in and let us know how appalled you were by my Belfast accent.
I'm going to guess pretty appalled.
Oh, come on, spot
probably.
On. It's spot on.
Yeah.
I haven't been home for a while, so maybe a little rusty.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's okay.
So running scenes. There are many. Can
so
anything
many.
Beat the happening where they literally run from the wind?
Can anything beat that?
They don't
happening?
Run like the wind. They run from the wind. And I think they succeed.
They do. I'm sorry. I'm still stuck on the phrase, can anything beat the happening?
Right.
Yes. Anything can beat the happening.
I'm not so sure it can. I've put it into my objective filmometer and it come out as the best film. So there you go.
Wow. Well, I stand corrected.
You got to admire it. You got to admire M. Night Shyamalan for staging an action sequence where they run across a field from some wind. I don't know. There's a certain amount of self-belief there. Mm. Maybe deluded in that case, but it's a bold...
It is certainly a move. Yes, absolutely.
Anyway,
I'm not sure it'd be my top running scene.
What?
Well, you know.
What's your top one?
Well, I mean, obviously, we've got to mention Chariots of Fire because there is no running without Chariots of Fire.
Yeah.
That's just the rules.
It's so dull.
Yeah, it is kind of dull.
It's
but
a
it
dull
looks
film.
Amazing. You know, so pretty and such.
The British are coming and they're coming in slow motion to Vangelis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
How about Race? What was it last year? The Jesse Owens film?
Yeah, directed by Stephen Hopkins.
Yeah, great running scenes in that. Proper, good running form. I was impressed by the sprinting there. It was excellent.
Okay.
I like that a lot.
That's not bad. You can't not mention great foot chases.
Yay, Point Break.
Point blank, I was going to say, but Point Break. Yeah, Point Break.
So point Break,
Lee
yeah.
Marvin
is
runs. I don't think
no,
running was in his skill set.
No, he would not.
Well, he's Walker, so why would he run?
Hey.
Then he'd be called Runner.
There you go. Zing.
Hammering the Empire Podcast, hammering jokes into the ground. This is why we didn't win the Listener's Choice category at the British Podcast Awards. We didn't even come in the top three. You know, I'm not saying that I'm angry.
Let it go, Chris.
Now,
Point Break has a great foot chase. You know what else has a great foot chase? Baby Driver. We watched Baby Driver recently.
There's a good chase in Hot Fuzz as well.
Yeah, Edgar Wright has form with good foot chases.
There's a good chase in A Most Violent Year. And that's a pretty good chase because that's one of the few foot chases I've seen on movies where people actually get tired.
Get stitches.
Yeah. And it's
the one through the subway station and they have to stop and get their breath back a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite realistic. It reminded me of the rigors I went through when I ran from a top London hotel to this pod booth not more than 15 minutes ago.
That's amazing.
It was quite something. We have to talk about Quicksilver and Days of Future Past, don't we? Not Apocalypse, but
yeah,
Days
okay.
of Future Past.
Days of Future Past, yes, that's true.
That's a great running scene.
I worry about his form, though. He's got to be doing his, you know, his muscles some damage there. Come on. Has he warmed up? You know, do we know?
That's the only way to get incapacitate him, isn't it? You know, just pull a hammy.
Seriously, you've got to watch out for these things, you know. Yeah. How are his hip flexors? We don't know.
I don't even know what they are.
Well, you will soon if you keep running. It'll be fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got to do those stretches, man. Lunges.
Some
anyway.
Ex-lunges. There's only one film, I believe, that has the word run twice in the title. So we've got to give a shout out to Run, Lola, Run.
How about Fatboy?
Run, Fatboy, Run.
Fatboy, Run.
Yeah.
The two of them.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's got Fatboy in the title as well, so I think that elevates that one.
And that's, again, that's an interesting one because that's, Helen, you've done a marathon. Bloody hell, stop running.
I've done
running.
Four.
Fuck me. I mean, really? And you're signing up next year for the London Marathon?
I've just signed up for the ballot. We'll see if I get in.
I thought about entering that, but that's insanity, isn't it? I mean,
do it. It's fun. It's brilliant. It's genuinely one of the best marathons in the world.
26.2 miles.
Yeah. But it's only 42.2 kilometres.
Oh, well, that sounds good. Yeah, I'm in. Run, fight, run, because again, the pegster hits a wall, a literal and metaphorical wall during that, which David Schwimmer brilliantly visualises in his inimitable style.
Always forget David Schwimmer directed that.
I imagine he's forgotten as well. But he's a very lovely man.
He is.
Yeah. Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think, you know, you could pretty much say Raiders of the Lost Ark for any question about best anything in any film.
It's usually right.
Just that opening sequence where Indy gets like a full kind of cardiovascular workout. he's lifting things, and then he does a short distance sprint from the boulder, and then he does a long distance across with being chased
That's
by
true, he does. He's got
dudes.
An interesting run, Indiana Jones, doesn't he? He's sort of like the arms are kind of up and out to the side.
He runs,
you know,
like Phoebe and Friends.
He does.
And he's sometimes holding onto his hat.
Yeah. It's a slightly chaotic run.
It's panicky.
Yeah.
Which works.
He's a proper runner, Harrison Ford. I wonder if we totted together the miles put in by major stars over the years in movies, he'd definitely be at the top.
Tom Cruise.
I was about to talk about Tom Cruise. Yeah.
There's a montage on YouTube of Tom Cruise running in all his films.
He does run. He's got a very powerful run.
He is committed to his run.
I think, is it Mission Impossible 3? The climax is him running?
It's him running across the rooftops in Shanghai, which he does for real because he's Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't even enter into his head. He
runs away from explosions. You know, he's just, he runs, man.
He is a proper runner. And we've even seen shots of him running on the set of Mission Impossible 6. You know,
well,
at his
spoiler.
Age.
Spoiler.
I know. It shouldn't be Ethan Hunt. It should be Ethan Runt. No, wait, hang on. That's a guy on Twitter.
That's wrong.
This is not good. But yes, definitely Tom Cruise. Number one, in with a bullet. Well done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That answers that. We've got to give a shout out for Forrest Gump.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't.
No, we do.
No, we don't.
He ran across America several times.
But for no reason. He wasn't even trying to raise money for charity.
Who needs a reason? Running is the reason in itself.
Oh, I'm not so sure about that.
You're not a fan?
Bruce Dern is a major runner, like in real life.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
He's a huge runner. He runs like at least 500 miles a year.
I'm a big fan of forlorn running in the movies. People running knowing that they're either going to get shot or that they're, you know, it's a futile gesture and they're, you know, there's an underlying sadness to it. I won't give away too
like
much.
Like my running.
like Helen's running. But anyway, in the end, Helen, when you think about it, isn't all running a futile gesture? And in the end, won't death get all of us? So what's the fucking point?
Thanks, Chris.
But Warren Beatty at the end of The Parallax View, that's a good, you know, Sad jogging.
Sad genre. I want to watch a movie involving sad jogging.
Sad jogging, that'd be great. And I love, there's a great
400
joke.
Blows, 400 blows.
400 blows.
Let's get art housey. I know Phil would be Phil's definitely talking about
he
that.
He would be, yeah.
But yeah, the famous last scene and the very famous last shot, the freeze frame, the young boy running along the beach, away from...
Which I once reenacted at Cannes Film Festival for a Philly Bloggy song.
Yes,
it was
did.
Poignant and moving, I think the critics...
And then last but not least, I'm going to give a shout out to a film that probably no one's expecting me to give a shout out to, but The Inbetweeners 2, which has a great, it just popped into my head, which has a great joke where Blake Harrison, they're in the desert and they think they're about to die, and he he sees an oasis and he runs off towards this mirage, and and the camera holds on him for the longest time as he staggers off in the distance. It's really, really funny. So there you go.
We have to mention Arnie running from a nuke in Predator. And
yes.
Robert Patrick, probably my favourite ever movie.
Yes.
Run. Robert Patrick in Terminator 2.
Yeah.
He based his run on a Porsche car, I think.
That's a silly thing to do.
We took a while, but we got there in the end. That is the correct
there
answer.
There we go. There we go. Robert Patrick, we salute you.
Who'd win, Tom Cruise or the T-1000? I used to imitate the T-1000 when I was running at school. In like events and stuff.
He gets his arms up.
I thought it's a good aerodynamism.
He's trying to run like a robot. It's something Catherine Waterston talks about in the current issue of Empire, in the Alien Covenant feature, about Michael Fassbender running like a robot. And I think that Robert Patrick also runs like a robot. For obvious reasons, in both cases, they're both playing robots. Hey-ho.
That helps.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So there's that. That's the question answered to Niall's satisfaction. And if you want to have your question read out in the Empire podcast, then but I won't always imitate the accent of the person who's doing it. That's just me and Niall go way back. If you want to have your question read out in the Empire podcast, do send it in to us via Twitter at Empire Magazine. Use the hashtag Empire Podcast, as Niall did. That's how we saw it. You can use Facebook as well. We're Empire Magazine. And you can email us, podcast@empireonline.com. Right. Well, last week, we spent about an hour talking about movie news because there was a lot of movie news. This week, there is no movie news as far as I can see. Or is there? Am I wrong?
Oh, there's movie news. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
There was a double bill of great bits of news yesterday that came in quite late. So Jeff Goldblum and Danny DeVito are doing a sitcom together.
Okay.
Which sounds amazing. They're doing this for Amazon Studios. And the idea is they used to be a musical duo who now hate each other and are forced to get back together.
Still on board.
It's Jeff Goldblum and Danny DeVito.
No, here's my question. How do you get them both in the same frame?
I tweeted the premiere magazine cover of Twins from back in the day this week, and it's amazing. It's Schwarzenegger fully in the frame, and you just get the top of DeVito's head. So maybe it'll be like that.
So maybe like that. Yeah, fair enough.
But that's just... Come on, I want to
see. Oh, yeah.
It.
Like, I could not be more signed up. That's wonderful news.
Yeah. I imagine DeVito will stand on Jeff Goldblum's shoulders.
Ah, that's standing on the shoulders of giants.
That is my guess.
That's Chaos Fury. Ah. And then the other bit is Brian De Palma is back with another film, and it will star Christina Hendricks.
Yes, and Nicolai Coster-Waldau. Is that correct?
That's why I didn't say the name.
Thanks.
It's exciting.
So this is called Domino, but it's not to be confused with Domino. Am I correct?
It's Domino Harvey.
I'm a bounty hunter.
Domino Harvey.
Domino Harvey.
No.
Okay. Hopefully different not. Domino.
Different Domino. Let it fall where it may. But I think a lot of people are excited about this. Ignoring Brian De Palma's last several films, this is very exciting news.
Passion was very bad. Let's not beat around the bush. I love Brian De Palma.
Redacted was even worse. The Black Dahlia, not great. At least said about Femme Fatale, the better. Mission to Mars, nope. His last good film, and I'm using air quotes here, was Snake Eyes. But he is an amazing director and a legend. So we wish him all the best. Well done, Brian De Palma.
Yeah. And this, to be clear, is a European thriller. Coster-Waldau plays a Copenhagen police officer who's looking for justice after his partner is murdered by a mysterious criminal. Mm-hmm. And his colleague's mistress is Christina Hendricks, and they team up to try and find the man responsible.
Exciting.
I'm excited. There was that great documentary that came out last year called De Palma, which... kind of made it seem at the end like he might almost be retiring. It kind of had him walking off down a street, and so I'm glad he's back after quite a long way.
That's what you do when you retire. You fade into the distance.
Yeah, he just walked down the street, got a cornetto, and came back again.
Yeah, I didn't walk down the street today. I ran down the street. No plans to retire here. Okay. So let's say some good news that the writer's strike has been averted. That was great.
That is great news. Yeah.
We talked about that last week, it could have been catastrophic. People might have been saying sentences and then stopping in major movies.
That's true.
You know,
I mean, last time it meant that we got some great TV shows were sort of curtailed halfway through. It really derailed some sort of ongoing narratives. It really, really messed up some major blockbusters.
It
which
really did.
We probably shouldn't name and shame too much.
What was that? I think he's saying Quantum of Solace.
I don't know what he means.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, thankfully we were able to go on. And also the writers are getting what sounds like a fair deal that they're happy with. So, hey, hooray for them.
Yeah, all the writers I follow on Twitter.
Strong and
Facebook
stable deal.
Seem happy with this? So
No.
A strong and stable deal. And it's great news because now the writers can work as films go into production. They can get the scripts just so, as we know Hollywood likes to do. I mean, just imagine a world where a Transformers movie made no sense. I mean, might have had that.
Come now, Chris.
We might have had
now.
That. And luckily, phew, bullet dodged. It's all good.
Yeah.
What else?
A couple of little things. Bad Moms Christmas is now the sequel to Bad Moms.
Has it got a colon?
I don't know. I don't want to know. But the good news, and this is good news, I think, is that they've cast some ladies as the bad mothers' mothers.
Well, this is important.
And this is important because the three ladies concerned are Susan Sarandon, Christine Baranski, and Cheryl Hines, all of whom can be hilarious in the right role.
Who's Cheryl Hines playing the mother of?
Cheryl Hines will be Kristen Bell's mother.
This is...
Yeah, with Baranski as Kunis's mother... And Catherine Hahn's mother will then be Susan Sarandon.
Big news for the Bad Mumsiverse.
It is big news for the Bad Mumsiverse.
The BMCU.
And it's good news because we were hearing about a Bad Dad's follow-up instead of a Bad Mom's follow-up, which seemed weird given that it was a female-led hit. So what, you turn around and immediately make it a male-led sequel? That's bizarre.
Yeah.
It's the bad cinematic universe.
It's the bad cinematic...
Yeah.
Well, no, come on. It wasn't that bad a first film, so we let's hope for the best.
I mean, why is... There was a huge hit? Why are we
It was a huge hit on a very small budget.
This passed me by.
Yeah. Speaking of huge hits on a very small budget, Jordan Peele's Get Out did pretty well, and he has just signed a deal to make several more movies with Universal and possibly, in fact, yes, and Blumhouse as well, who financed Get Out.
Good.
Which is great, because Get Out is thus far my film of the year. I'm very, very excited about it.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Can I have some Hamilton news for a second?
Yes, please.
That's indulge you. You haven't been here for, 5 weeks?
I know. It's been a long time. Anthony Ramos, who played two roles in the musical, as many people did,
has just
landed two roles in films as a result. So he'll be playing a role in A Star Is Born. This is obviously the remake of 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 the...
This is Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper,
this is a real film, but it is.
Bradley Cooper directing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ramos will be playing Ramon, who's the best friend to Lady Gaga's character. So he's another young, struggling artist. He's a dancer in this case, I believe. Mm. And he will also be playing in Godzilla King of the Monsters. So he's in that with Vera Farmiga, Kyle Chandler, Millie Bobby Brown, Aisha Hines, O'Shea Jackson Jr. and Ken Watanabe. So we don't know much about that, but he will be apparently...
Godzilla King of the Monsters could be a musical.
Let's hope. That would be amazing. He'll be playing Corporal Mendoza. So chances of getting to the end of the film, I would say 50-50 at best, bless him. But then that also kind of chimes with his Hamilton work. Spoiler.
I haven't seen it yet, Helen.
It's history, dude.
Don't spoil history.
Sorry, what is it? Okay, and I've got just a couple of last bits and pieces. So Warner Brothers have announced some release date changes. You know I love my release date changes.
Oh, brilliant.
So they've moved Godzilla vs. Kong up a week from... May 29th to May 22nd, 2020. I will be doing Pilates that day. The way I'm going.
You're doing Pilates, though. That's cool.
I think I might get into it.
It's great.
It looks pretty good.
Good for your core.
Yeah. So they've created a writer's room, which I'm always a little bit antsy about, the writer's room. Yes, it gives writers some work, but I do feel it leads to cookie cutter scripts, and it works on TV shows, don't get me wrong, but it does worry me for these big franchise movies. So it's going to include some good people though. Terry Rossio, Patrick McKay, J.D. Payne, Lindsay Beer, Kat Fasco, and J. Michael Straczynski, who is very, very good as well.
Yes.
Babylon 5 is a big pile of shit.
You're a big pile of shit.
Get out. That's not the response. And this is a film I didn't even know was happening, because obviously we've covered it on the Empire podcast. Tag, which is a comedy starring Jeremy Renner, Hannibal Buress, and Tracy Morgan and Ann Helms. And it's coming out on June 29th, 2018. And I'm I'm not surprised this movie's being made. It's based on a real life story of a group of friends who've been playing a game of tag for the last 30 years.
Have you read about this. Yeah. It's none more cinematic.
Absolutely.
That's an amazing idea.
I remember reading about this and thinking this is going to be a movie within about 2 or 3 years. So it's a group of friends and they've literally been playing tag for 30 years. And what they do is they have a 2-week period, I believe, every year where the game activates. And they now live in different parts of the US. And they fly in to try and tag each other, and people will hide inside like laundry baskets and the trunk of people's cars, and then leap out and tag, and then run away, and then you know someone will be it for a year, which is obviously a horrible prospect.
They could have called it, but that was already taken. I don't know. Is hiding like a sort of inherently cinematic?
I think it could.
Isn't that going to be a lot of Jeremy Renner just sort of hiding under a table? For extended set pieces.
So, like the Bourne Legacy, then.
Oh, snap!
Maybe he'll hide behind a wolf in this, but yeah. And can we mention the Dark Tower trailer?
We should.
We should mention the Dark Tower trailer, which has been long awaited because this film is coming out in August, and it's now May.
Yeah.
And so it's quite late, but was it worth the wait?
Well, I have to say the casting of Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey looks great. I'm very, very happy about both of those pieces. Maybe slightly more teenage boy than I was maybe expecting. Maybe slightly more of a Narnia feel than I maybe anticipated.
It is a little bit Narnery, though.
Yeah, I know. I guess that's true. I'll be honest. I haven't finished reading the books. For some reason, I've always gotten slightly bogged down in these books and kind of given up.
In the first one, in particular. See, that's the interesting thing about this.
First and a half, I think.
Yeah, the kicks in from the second one. As I said on Twitter yesterday, the first book, The Gunslinger. I love Stephen King. I love his work. I love the Dark Tower. Mm. But the first one is very much the first season of Parks and Recreation. You don't really need to read it.
Okay.
It's a bit slow and a bit weird.
And everybody's haven't figured out the characters yet. And Andy was a dick instead of being
a
lovable.
He wrote
it
when he was 19. He's trying to be a little pretentious, and it doesn't quite work.
Okay.
But it gets really good. I read them all last year. And it took a year, so that's why you didn't see me last year. But it's great. It gets very, very good.
All right, I'll give it another go.
And then gets bad, and then gets good again. they're crazy, and they get very meta, and Stephen King turns
up. I've heard about that, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how weird the movie gets.
Okay.
Movies.
Unless if we get more movies, but
I hope we do. My only thought is it does look good. It looks slick. There's lots of good stuff in it. It maybe looks a little bit formulaic from the trailer, but hopefully that's just the way you sell it.
Yeah.
I hope they go into some weird territory.
Hey, speaking of Stephen King, you know that they're remaking Firestarter with your favourite Chris, Akiva Goldsman, aboard to direct.
I'm aware of that.
Chris is starting a fire right now in protest.
Well, so that's enough about that.
Time now for this week's guests. Julian Barrett and Simon Farnaby met when they worked together on The Mighty Bush a few years ago. They hit it off instantly, and they decided to write a movie about an actor once famous for playing a TV cop who is given a second shot at the limelight when a serial killer demands that the TV cop be brought onto his case. The actor is Richard Thorncroft. The TV cop is Mindhorn. So is the film. And the duo came into our old pod booth at our offices this week. This is the very last thing that happened.
It was
the
being dismantled during the interview.
A burly man came up to me afterwards. And because he was trying to get into the interview while it was happening, because we hadn't been told it was being dismantled. And then I saw Julian and Simon out the building, and he came up to me afterwards and just came right up to my face, went, "Are you done?" I went, "Yes, I'm done."
Maybe he just really wanted to hear the interview. He's a massive fan of the Bush.
He had a screwdriver. It was very, very, very tough times. All right, here we go. This is Julian Barrett and Simon Farnaby talking about Mindhorn and all other sorts of stuff as well. Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined on the Emperor podcast by Julian Barrett and Simon Farnaby, creators and stars of Mindhorn. How are you?
Hello. I'm well. I don't want to speak for you, Simon, but I'm good.
I'm okay too, thank you.
Yeah?
Yeah. Good.
Okay?
Yeah, really good.
Okay. You sure about that?
I don't want
to interrogate you Paxman style, but are you okay?
This is the hardest question I've ever had. yes.
All right. Good. You guys must be excited. This is it. The big week.
This is the week.
It is finally being unveiled.
It's finally happening.
This is a
truth time.
It's truth time.
The crunch.
George Lucas, he took a holiday when Star Wars came out. He went to the beach because he didn't want to know what people were thinking about his movie or whether people were seeing his movie. No. Do you have any plans? Are you going to go to Wakefield? Where are you going to go? Are you going to go to the beach, or are you going to go into the cinemas to see how people are watching the movies?
I think we're contractually obliged to be... we're not contractually obliged, but we're at screening, aren't we? We're at Loco.
Well, when it comes out, Festival. But then maybe after that. Is that when George Lucas went away?
Yeah.
Did he go away for the the actual day it was out.
George Lucas, he did a Q&A at Loco, and then he went
on holiday.
And he went away with Steven Spielberg.
And he was sort of wondering why he was in a comedy film festival when they just made, you know...
This is when they came up with the idea of doing Indiana Jones.
That's right, on the beach.
On the beach.
In Hawaii, I believe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So no plans.
It is worth taking a holiday.
Hawaii and the sequel plans. Sounds like a good little something we could do.
Or come up with a completely different character like Indiana Jones, and then you have two franchises on the go: Mindhorn and
spinning franchise plates.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, but no plans.
To go away after. Well, yeah, no, actually, I'm going to go to the lakes the week after.
The week after, okay.
But we'll probably know by then the sort of hullabaloo, whether people have gone to the cinema or whether they've stayed at home.
But you guys have done a series of Q&As regionally. You've been around the country, and all of which have done really, really well. So you know that people are locking into this movie and are connecting with it.
Yes, we have enough evidence that people are generally enjoying it.
Yes, I mean, the people who came to screenings. People who came to these screenings enjoyed it.
They enjoyed
it. Is that all there is? Is the worry?
Did all the people who were ever going to see it just come to those screenings?
And then there's just a massive drop off. You know, we don't know. Who knows? Nobody knows that. I remember when we did the Boosh first, the Mighty Boosh. We went on tour and we didn't really know what was going to happen, and just loads of people came out of the woodwork. So, but we had no way of knowing at the time.
No,
from the TV show, because you don't get any sort of response, obviously, and you don't know, you know, some viewing figures, but. There was actually quite a lot of people kind of came out of the cracks to see it. And
when do you know you've crossed over and entered the consciousness, so to speak?
Well, I suppose when people quote stuff to you, or when people come up to you, or when people who aren't necessarily your generation or your group or your tribe come up to you and say stuff to you, you know, like, get out of my garden. No, but they come up to you and say something that you think, well, that's interesting that they would know. Maybe that means you've sort of infected the
crossed over
consciousness. Yeah. I don't know what's the
protocol.
Is that something that's happened to you as well, Simon, with Horrible Histories and Yonderland? People come up to you and quote stuff back.
Yeah,
as well.
I mean, most, you know, all children. If you're in a place where there's sort of say a bunch of 10-year-olds, like a shop, service stations are quite. I can't go into any service station. I don't know why it's service stations.
It's your target market, though.
It really is, yeah, it really is. Yeah, it is. Like, people in Volvos, and they've got two kids, and they come out.
I know what you mean, actually. There is something about that.
Yes, there is.
I think it's because people are crossing. It's the idea of coincidence is even more in the air. Like,
yeah, they go, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting some petrol for my car and then some magazines. I'm buying Empire.
I always think a service station would be a good place to have a gig. I don't know why they don't have gigs there. I know people are always on their way, but they could stop off. You could see, you know, you could aim to get to a certain service station for a certain time to see Coldplay, for instance. Or, you know, or you could have a gig in a service station. Don't you think that would be transformative?
It would certainly be interesting.
I'm not sure how the bar would do. You know what I mean? Yeah. The bar.
Well, no, it'd be a non-bar venue. So no smoking, no bar. No, it'd just be like a place to see music live.
In the car park or next to KFC or...
Yeah. McDonald's. Between KFC and Burger King.
That'd be interesting.
I was in a W.H. Smith once at service station. This guy went, oh, my boy wants you to do the dance, to do the stupid deaf dance. And I went, oh, yeah, I don't know if I can do... It's quite an energetic dance, but I'll have a photo. And I went, nah, listen, mate, he wants to dance. And I went, slightly, I'm sort of not really in character and I really need my makeup on. He went, do the dance for the boy. Look at him. I looked at him and this kid was sort of started weeping and I was going, what's going on? So I did a really meet and he went, stupid. Did a little version for it. That sort of thing that happened.
And did it mollify the kid? Did the tears stop?
He didn't seem that bothered, but the dad seemed to not want to kill me anymore. I did get rid of the imminent danger.
Julian, you've never been forced to perform Bush at knife point, have you? Or anything like that?
People do get quite sort of, what's the word? Proprietorial or something over you making you do something or thinking that you would want
you
to.
You would want to do.
You'd want to
bit.
Do. Can you do that thing? Can you say that thing? And I'm just going to film it for my wife who can't be here. But can you just do a little bit from the show and I'll film it, okay?
Yeah,
go,
yeah.
You go now. And you sometimes they're just there filming you, and you either go on camera, I don't want to do this, and then they go, oh, so you're not you're a bit weird in real life. Yeah, I am weird. Yeah, yeah, you found out. Mm. All right. And then, or you just do it and suck it up and do a funny little dance. Easier, it's easier to do that. But it's a kind of champagne problem.
Yeah,
a champagne problem.
Yeah, of course, of course.
It's
but
not.
But still, I mean, it is an interesting conundrum to address every. I imagine that happens every week, every day.
Something when you're like doing that. Something like a tour, but then you signed up for it then.
Yeah.
When you're out in Tesco's with your kids, you don't necessarily want to do that. But
do you ever find that you forget things that people say, do that bit or do that bit, and then you can't remember it?
Yes, I've deleted it, most of it.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it. Yeah.
That was a one-off. It happened one time. It was improvised. I do not know what I'm saying. But let's talk about Mindhorn, which is this film's been in your head in various forms now for a long time.
Mm.
About 7-8 years, or is it longer than that?
Something like that. Yes. Like that.
Yeah.
From the conception to the birth.
Mm.
Yes. Yeah. And it was a sexual process. but we sort of we had the joint love of that genre, that era of TV, a nostalgic sort of love of that. Growing up on myself, $6 Million Man was my favourite, and Simon's was...
I like Bergerac.
Bergerac.
It's sort of less... It's a bit weird to be a kid like Bergerac. Well, I mean, $6 Million Man had an exciting...
premise.
I
mean, Bergerac's a bit later on, although you're a bit younger than me, so maybe Bergerac hit you at the same time as $6 Million Man hit me.
Yeah, probably, actually.
You know what I mean? So that crucial moment of you know, growth where your brain's developing. So you know, my brain, you know, took on the $6 Million Man, and yours took on the
Bergerac,
the beige leather of Bergerac,
and with a drink problem and a dodgy leg
and an interest in golf and yachts and
Lee Majors, John Nettles. I mean, they're
both chunky. Yeah. They're chunky, robust, handsome men.
Yeah,
and I think it's about the actors who played them as well. Because we looked a bit at the professionals, and you know, the professionals.
Yeah,
and they
sort
of went their sort of very different way. Like Lewis Collins ended up sort of selling computer components in L.A. and he really loved the show, and you know, professionals wanted to sort of have a reunion and go back to it. And Martin Shaw sort of distanced himself from it. So it's sort of the relationship that you have
between
the show that you
were a part of, and especially it's a heroic show, and it's a show about a real man and a real hero, and how as you age and, you know, your warts and foibles become evident, and this image of you stays exactly the same, like Dorian Gray, basically. It's
of course,
slightly frightening, and the reality for all actors, of course, we're all going through. As our image remains pristine, but our selves crumble and wrinkle to die. Oh, God.
Do you not have a CG man? I have a CG man who just keeps me looking young.
Yeah.
I've been looking this way for the last 20 years. I'm actually 75 years old. You could have gone anywhere with this idea.
I think you'll find there's only one way to go with this idea. But,
there's only one storyline.
we did the idea of a phone call. Do you mean the premise?
The premise, because the idea of Mindhorn himself, who if people don't know, is a TV detective who has an eye that can tell that can tell whether people are telling the truth.
They can tell the time.
They can tell the time and tell the truth. I make tea and all sorts of things.
I have an eye that can tell the time. It's 7 o'clock.
2:05. See?
But it's not much better than that, is the premise of Mindhorn, the show itself. But our film is a different matter. Our film is about a man, about an actor who used to play the detective. So that's the thing. We kind of we imagined if there was a crime on the Isle of on Jersey, and they wanted to find this suspect, and they called Jersey police and said, you know, I'll turn myself in. The suspect would say, I'll turn myself in if I could speak to Bergerac. Would they get John Nettles to take the call? Would they get him over to the island? That was the sort of idea that we thought, this is great.
Yeah,
this
and
could
what
actually...
if John Nettles needed a career boost and he got his old jacket and found his Jaguar and drove around and made
and tried
a song
to capitalise on this rather sad tale. So that was the sort of despicable engine that was going to power this man who was... a sort of narcissist and a sad bloke as well. Not a million miles away from, you know, you're only a few bad decisions away from being Richard Thornycroft, really, I think, as an actor. So it's just a sort of giving him a little bit of heart, but you sort of see the sadness of the man. But he's basically quite venal, and he's trying to get his career back online and find his past and address past mistakes and track down the love that he left behind and all that sort of stuff. So it's a rich stew of emotional ballast or something. So you can really power a narrative. That's what we felt when we came up with the idea.
Yeah.
It wasn't like we wanted to just do some funny parodies of stuff. We knew that there was a kind of an emotional journey in there if we could sort of tease it out. So that it took us a while to do that.
Absolutely. That's the thing. The crime plot in this movie actually works, and there's a thriller component to it which works alongside the comedy.
Yes, it's a comedy thriller, which is partly why it took so long to get it made.
Yeah.
Was as soon as you have a gun and someone running and a car chase, you've got a big budget. You can't do that without spending a lot of money.
But also we were trying to make it believable enough anyway because the show itself, Mindhorn, the TV show made in the 80s, was terrible and didn't look good and everything. But we had to have a reality that was coming up against, if you know what I mean. So we had to sort of create a sort of believable structure that and a believable feel to it somehow.
But it also had to sort of, because it does veer into some of the tropes that our plot actually does veer into some of the tropes from those sort of detective shows, without giving too much away. But as you say, it still has to sort of work and make sense.
Mm.
But
this is a character, Richard Thornycroft, who I think is... has got great potential. You could do sequels with this guy. You could do a TV show with this guy. You could. Is that what you were thinking?
Could do. He's got a musical side career going on. Because in the day he did a sort of Dennis Waterman, or tried to do a few bits and pieces as a singer. He wanted to branch out into vocals. So there's that aspect of him. There's the idea of him doing further adventures in some way, perhaps. Mm-hmm. He's a good character, and Simon and I have been sort of thinking about things to do, but we sort of just wait and see if there's an appetite for it.
And did you have to draw straws to decide who played Richard, or was it always you for the off, Julian?
It was always Julian.
It was always me.
It was always you.
It was never Simon.
Julian tried to not do it for a bit because he's sort of a bit like that. And he's going, maybe we should get Ben Kingsley should do it or someone like that.
Someone with gravitas, someone who had a history and was known to people. We thought initially I did, but Simon was pretty adamant that I should play him, and I accepted that gauntlet. But no, it was nice. It was fun to do and to think of, and be in that character for a while. I'm still slipping in and out of him every now and again.
Yeah.
When I'm out and about.
Like just some loaf, like some slippers.
I want to order a cappuccino and, things like that. But no,
I do it as him. Get Americano with hot milk.
It's not actually that different to me, but he's a bit more forthright and a bit more in charge of himself and a bit more,
Yeah. But he's let himself go. You are a fine figure of a man.
Well, that's right. Yes, I had to bulk up for the part.
It was a great challenge for you, wasn't it? That?
To put in a lot of work with all the foods that I had to eat, the curries and the heavy milk.
You were like that before. You were in training for a while then.
When I realised I wanted to move into acting, which I knew that I the parts that I was interested in basically were bigger men.
Parts, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not interested in playing thin people. I just don't think they interest me. So I knew straight away that was where I was wanting to focus my energies and play some of those sort of types. Of course, when I come off a project, I go back down to my resting weight, which
is that
of a lynx or
You haven't done that yet, have you?
Not yet, but interesting case. We're still in the process of locking the edit.
It's finished.
Yeah. So at the moment,
we have finished filming.
It's out in 3 days, I believe.
Yeah, those 3 days you can change an edit. You can completely change things. So in case we do pick up shots the day before, you never know. You never know. This is something about showbiz.
Yeah, absolutely. You can still, on Friday when the film's out, you can still be outside.
Yeah. I mean, Kubrick would insert things into the film during the first screenings and take things out, which I could.
During the first screenings?
I think he chopped off the end of
he
The Shining
runs
or something.
To the projectionist. Can I have reel three, please? I just
scissors.
Need to put
some scissors.
Some scissors.
Some sellotape. I'm Stanley Kubrick.
Just had an idea.
No, but he did. There's one screening where they had the original ending of The Shining. And that screening was the only time that ending was ever shown. And he got all the prints back or something. Well, I don't know how the hell he did that.
No, because it didn't work.
He didn't like the ending.
It had a big sort of song and dance. We're in the maze.
Jack Nicholson wakes up.
Life.
You know, he's all frozen. He wakes up and goes, wah!
Yeah,
boo!
Yeah.
And it sort of took the edge off. No, the original ending is they're in hospital. And the mother's in hospital. And... Danny's in the room outside, the waiting room, the child Danny, and he's bouncing a ball like Jack Nicholson.
Oh.
And so it goes, it's starting, again or something. It's like that sort of circularity.
Oh, it's genetics.
Oh, it's some horror film circularity type thing, you know.
It's good.
But that was left out.
One more time. So if you were to go and insert a new ending to Mindhorn, what would you do?
Use one of the old endings that we shot.
quite a few.
No, we didn't shoot one that quite well. We'd had so many ideas though, and we sort of
he ran out of time and money and everything. Yeah. So we were trying to it was such a hard it was quite a hard shoot to get everything in, and for comedy as well, quite elaborate and things. So we kind of had a way out of it, and we were trying to get a bigger thing shot for the end. But in the end, we ended up cutting getting out of it quicker rather than in a way, which is quite good for a comedy to not have too much, I think. Anyway, I quite like short comedy.
Yeah. Absolutely. 90 minutes, done and dusted.
No, it is. Yeah. We couldn't really think of anything that... It has quite a few sort of nice laughs in the final scene, so we didn't want to then start a new... sort of location that wasn't going to deliver big laughs. It was just going to be sort of quite boring and serious.
Because you did something which is, I don't think I've really ever heard of this before, but I think most films should do it actually, which is you shot a 5-day sort of teaser or a no, how would you describe it? An amuse-bouche, if you will. A sizzler reel, to get an idea of the characters and to get an idea, because the director, Sean Foley, hadn't directed a film before. Mm. And that really helped, didn't it?
Hugely.
So you see, suddenly you see the character and you see the setting a bit and you see something of the relationships in the film and you realise that, that's actually might not work as well as we thought. So we changed quite a lot on the basis of that. So very useful. I mean, you don't really do that with films because you can't get the people together, I suppose, and all that. But it was
hugely useful because it was really we worked out how his character worked. Basically.
Yeah,
because he had a sidekick who was sort of dragging him on this mission, and we went that really should be Richard. He should be the one engine, going. Yeah. I want to go.
He should be his own sidekick.
Yeah, he should be exactly. Yeah. It was because you can sometimes just dilute your main character by having someone else on the journey with him. So we discovered that. That was a big lesson.
Yeah.
And did it change anything for you, Simon? Were you playing a different character or were you playing the same character?
I don't think I was even in the...
Well, you were thinking about, we thought you would be... No, you weren't in the sizzler, but you were in the sizzler. In the side salad, you weren't in that. But we were thinking about... you thought you were going to be something. We always thought you would be something in it.
But, we knew I was going to do something, but...
Yes, but then and when we came to be writing Clive a bit more, the sort of rival, his love rival, who was his stuntman and is now with his lost love. Mm. So the pain of that and the irony of that and the fact that he needs to be someone who's physically similar, and Simon and I look at, from a distance... quite a distance we look similar, and so we it would be a natural thing to do. And then Simon was good. He did an accent, a sort of Dutch accent that seemed to really annoy Richard. And it was good sort of it just became clear that you should be Clive,
he was staring at us in the face all along, really.
That was good. That
what's next? Have you are you working on anything next to make me expect to see Mindhorn 2 in 8 years time, or
we'd love to do more of...
We would love to do more. We thought about doing a prequel, but it's quite hard to
pre-horn.
Make. Pre-horn. but we'd have to age, we'd have to become younger. and also would have to have the Isle of Man
de-age.
Be conceivably look like the 80s. which would cost a lot of money in modernisation.
I was going to say, where is it at the moment?
Well, we went over there, we took some fruit with us, and they were like, they'd never seen it, so they were quite sort of, what is this? We had a banana.
What is this bent, what is this thing?
This bent yellow sweet stick.
I mean, oh, we have these in tins. They're not coming tins.
I bring you fruit.
I've been to the Isle of Man once in my life, and I got huge, horrible food poisoning during it, during a 5-day stay. But I also saw Police Academy 3, so it wasn't all bad.
Mm. At the cinema?
At the cinema,
was
yeah.
This last year sometime.
coming attractions, Police Academy 3. We've got it, guys, we've got it.
It's finally here.
Everyone gathers round, they watch it.
Yeah.
No, not quite. But what was your Isle of Man experience?
It was
like?
Fun, though. Yeah.
It was great. It was brilliant.
They're up for a laugh.
We sort of make more jokes since we've been there, and they've gone, you know what, we love it, and we love jokes about the Isle of Man. So now, now we have full reign to do things like our fruit. Bring them fruit jokes. I didn't mean that. Go all out.
Most films aren't set there, but they are filmed there. But he stands in for lots of other films as Iron Man.
Mm. Lord of the Rings, that wasn't shot there.
Dune. Alien.
Police Academy 3, actually.
Alien was just shot in a butcher's in Douglas.
Police Academy 3, yeah.
There's so much. There's the Laxi Wheel. There's the...
there's a wealth.
There's the Laxi Wheel. there's tons
there's
of
a big wheel.
There's the Laxi Wheel.
And
then there's the Laxi Wheel. So there's lots of things to see. No, there's the
There's different angles
railway.
Of the Laxi Wheel. You can go around it and see it from different ways. No, that's good.
It has some very beautiful...
It's a kind of... It has a lot of different scenery and a small amount of space. So you can go from a mountaintop to a beach to a giant red wheel in the space of 20 minutes kind of thing. So that's...
You know, they claim... Remember that? They claim it's five times bigger than Jersey. And they just still don't believe it. I should just Google this to find out.
I'm gonna let you guys go, but I will blow your minds with one Isle of Man bit of trivia. Did you know this? That legend has it that the Irish giant Finn McCool got angry one day and scooped out a piece of land in Northern Ireland and flung it into the sea. And that became the Isle of Man. And the water rushed into the hole that he had left, and that became Loch Ness.
Oh, in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, the biggest lake.
Ah.
There you go. Work that into your sequel.
Maybe it was a meteor.
Maybe it was.
That was how they translated it in ancient times.
It's more likely it was a meteor rather than a giant Irishman.
Like it hit, and it ejected a large sort of chunk. Yeah. And someone went, that's... Flundle.
The god.
With the fire.
Manananan.
Reached down and pulled out a sod the size of an island.
And hurled it and said, this is rubbish, I don't want it anymore. And that became the Isle of Man. But it's in the sea, and leave it.
And on that note, what a pleasure. Simon Farnaby, Julian Barrett, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks a lot. So that was Julian Barrett and Simon Farnaby, and let's start off by talking, sadly, truncated reviews section because we don't have a lot of time. People are banging on the window. It might be the same burly man with a screwdriver again. Who knows? To try and kick us out of here, so apologies. But let's talk about Mindhorn. Hell's Bells.
Yeah, so this is Julian Barrett, obviously starring as a kind of a star who's, let's say, past his best, I think it's fair to say. He's Richard Thorncroft, who once starred in an 80s TV show. Let's face it, it was basically Bergerac.
Meets $6 million man.
Okay, yeah. Called Mindhorn. And he is called into action once again when there's a murder on the Isle of Man where the show was set. The Isle of Man, the coolest of islands.
Such a great island. I had food poisoning in the Isle of Man, as you heard in the interview.
I went once when I was 11. I had a lovely time.
Really? Yep. I was violently ill.
Well, I didn't. So, anyway, Russell Tovey is a super fan turned supervillain who's responsible for this murder. He's called the Kestrel, and he insists he will only talk to Mindhorn. Mm-hmm. So they have to get Thorncroft back into action.
Back into action.
As best he can to try and, you know, solve this case or resolve this situation. And he thinks this is going to be his big comeback, and it turns out maybe not quite I think, the way he wants.
I like this film. I should obviously mention, as if anyone's been following me on Twitter this week, I've been doing a number of Q&As with Julian Barrett and Simon Farnaby for this movie. I liked it more than our review. That's why I'm doing the Q&As. But we gave it 3 stars.
Yeah.
And I can kind of see why we did. It's, you know, it's funny, but it's patchy. It's a little bit of a... It is a first movie for Sean Foley, the director. It's their first major movie as screenwriters. It you know, not every scene is a comedic powerhouse. But when it's funny, it's very, very funny. And Julian Barrett's Richard Thorncroft is... It's a very interesting character because it could have been Alan Partridge Mark II. Mm. It isn't that. There's something... real and very, very sad about this character as well. About it. He's very vainglorious as well. Works very, very well bumping up against all the people from his past that he wronged in terrible, terrible ways. Simon Farnaby is very funny as Clive Parnevik, the Dutch stuntman.
Stuntman,
who
yes.
likes to walk around in the semi-nude, which is... and there's just a lot of fun set pieces. You know, it gets increasingly crazy. But anyone expecting, who may have seen The Mighty Bush or Yonderland, and is expecting something similarly daffy and surreal. This isn't really that. What's interesting about this is it's actually, it does try and work as a comedy thriller. There is a thriller plot that plays out here. There's a conspiracy. The things are revealed. Not, it doesn't entirely go the way you might expect. And that's interesting to me. It's more of a straightforward comedy than it is a flight of fantasy from these guys.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but it's interesting. But there's definitely enough here, I would say, to warrant another outing for Mindhorn. Some great really good cameos as well.
It's a
really good title, yeah. But we gave it 3 stars, a recommendation.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And next up, we have Unlocked.
Yeah, we're talking of titles. Not a good title. In fact, I've seen this film and I have no idea still why it's called Unlocked. I keep thinking it's called Unblocked. So, to check that quite regularly. So this is a Michael Apted spy thriller, which is set in London. It's got Noomi Rapace as a CIA operative who is now working behind a desk.
Oh,
sold.
You know, nobody saw that coming. And will she get called out for some more?
Oh, probably not.
You know, pulled back into the field. Who knows? It is a very generic film, sadly. It's got a really good cast. It's got Michael Douglas. It's got John Malkovich, who does his entire performance over Skype. Pretty much. He does use FaceTime in one scene, but other than that, he's... And he starts doing weird things to try and, like, you know, spice his performance up. Like, he sort of comes right up to the screen, so his face is, like... feeling that it's peculiar. It's got Orlando Bloom as a cheeky chappy Danny Dyer type who at one point, and I'm not making this up, says the line, "I love a tagine." And it's a very...
I mean, who doesn't love a tagine though? A tagine is delightful.
It's maybe not Orlando's best work. He's a little bit miscast, sadly. Noomi's very good, as always. She gets to do a bit of action, but it's a not a memorable film, unfortunately. It's kind of a bit of a Bourne rehash, a bit of a 24 rehash. There's bioweapons and dodgy terrorist types, and it just looks a bit cheap, sadly.
I don't know, you've sold me on it completely. It sounds amazing. I gotta go.
There's a scene where Orlando Bloom does fight some pit bulls in a lift.
Well, no,
my attention.
So, but you know, there's a few little nice bits, but it's been done before a lot better.
All right.
So sadly, 2 stars in for Unlocked, and that's I'm afraid sadly because people are climbing around the window. I'm so sorry about this. It's our first week trying to get the new pod booth up and running, and some teething problems. But also out this week, we have Lasse Hallström's A Dog's Purpose, which features a lot of dogs, none of them fighting Orlando Bloom in a lift. Whether that's a bonus is up to you. We have a one-day-only release of the Woody Harrelson Grand Experiment Lost in London, which was the film he shot live back in January, I believe it was. And I was there to see it happening, and it's a very intriguing first film for someone to do. Woody! Madman! But there you go. That's out this week. One day only, I believe, in Picture House cinemas. And then we have Jamie Foxx and Michelle Monaghan going rogue in a nightclub in the thriller Sleepless, which I believe, I'm led to believe, will not give you sleepless nights. It's not terribly great.
If they haven't used the song Insomnia in there somewhere, they're missing a trick.
Or Murder on the Dance Floor.
Yeah, this is true. Something's gone horribly, horribly wrong. And that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Very, very short one. Please forgive us. Join us next week for more film-related fun. We'll be joined by someone. I'm not entirely sure who. Don't worry. I'm on top of it, guys. I've got it all figured out. It's going to be absolutely fine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
I feel totally secure now.
Totally secure. Our Guardians of the Galaxy spoiler special, which we haven't recorded yet, should also be out next week. We're in a little bit of studio turmoil at the moment, but we'll get it rectified. Hopefully it's going to be out on Monday, May 8th, but you never know, it might be pushed back a couple of days. So do keep an eye on our Twitter and Facebook feeds for more details for that. Until then, it is goodbye from Nick.
Gotta run.
It's goodbye from Helen.
No running, I'm sitting.
You're not in next week, are you?
No, potentially not, I'm afraid.
You're not off running?
No, I'm not off running, I'm doing a thing.
All right, okay. And it's goodbye for me. I'm off to continue training for my 10K. You should try it, Helen. It's really quite good.
I'm doing a half marathon at the weekend. I'll see you after that.
Always have to one-up me, O'Hara. Curse your name! Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye.